let's start with this U.S.-Canada border closure. Even though it's partially open, this situation is affecting our economy, Canadian economy?
It is, although, I mean, not in, you know, not as much as you might think. It's the border is open to commercial traffic. Mm-hmm. It's open to trucks and goods, you know, carrying, carrying the trade in goods both ways, north and south. It's not open to private travel, except for citizens of each country that need to return, or citizens that can show an essential purpose of travel. What that basically means is, you know, now there are many, many private trips that normally happen. We estimate about 50 million car trips a year across the U.S.-Canada border, private car trips. Some of those are for work, but the vast majority of those were or used to be for tourism or leisure, you know, people visiting friends and family, people, you know, traveling for, you know, excursions, whether it's, you know, for the same day trip or multiple days. And all of that has ended, or almost all of that has ended. Mm-hmm. So that definitely does have an effect on the economy. You know, there's, you know, holidays that aren't being taken, there's friends and family that aren't being visited, there's money that's not been being spent in both countries. But that's still a small fraction of the amount of commerce that flows across the border, which is still flowing. Commercial traffic is still flowing, as it, you know, as it always does. In fact, if anything, I'm not exactly sure what the staffing levels are at the border, but since the, you know, border agents no longer need to process private travel, they can hopefully process commercial travel, you know, without any problem.
Yeah, sure, because honestly, I didn't understand why Trump wanted to open it as soon as possible. I mean, Trump wanted to open everything as soon as possible, right? But he insisted in this situation to open our border, and I was like, what is happening, right? Why is he insisting?
Yeah, there's actually no good reason for it. I mean, to the extent that we don't want any non-essential travel to happen right now, mm-hmm. private travel across the U.S.-Canada border is the best example of that. There's no reason to open it to non-essential travel. So I'm not sure what his reasoning might have been.
Yeah.
It's not affecting commercial travel. It's even essential private travel. You know, there's still people who work in essential jobs on one side of the border or the other. You know, there's this famous story of Canadian nurses who work in American hospitals and so on. So even that travel is still continuing. That's not been stopped. Mm-hmm. So there's really no good reason, given all the other restrictions we're putting on our lives, to open the border to private travel right now. And I'm actually, you know, it was good to see the Canadian government push back on that.
Okay. Now let's talk about the oil price. Why is the oil price so important for our economy in general?
Yeah, so in Canada, you know, we're a net exporter of oil. We produce more oil than we consume, and so the excess oil we sell on the world market. Mainly, we sell it directly to the United States, but effectively, it's, you know, the price that we can get for it depends on the world demand for oil. And so anytime the price of oil falls, that's a loss to the Canadian economy because we're net producers of oil. So, you know, higher oil prices lead to a strengthening of the Canadian dollar. They also lead to an improved balance of payments. They basically just lead to higher revenues for Canada. And so, of course, the opposite is true when oil prices fall. So right now, not only have they fallen, they've actually fallen, you know, in some markets even to, you know, prices below zero. And what that means is the entire oil sector in Canada is suddenly faced with this problem of what to do with this excess oil that they're producing. And, you know, obviously they're trying to slow production dramatically. But what that's going to mean is a big loss in employment, in jobs, a number of jobs depend on oil extraction, as well as tax revenue. So a lot of provincial tax revenues, especially in Alberta, but even in Newfoundland, depend on oil exploration and extraction. So all of those revenues are just basically disappearing.
Okay, and how much of our economy depends on oil?
So I actually can't tell you the exact figure, partly because that changes itself, you know, as the price of oil changes. That's probably something I suppose you could look up to see what it is most recently. But, you know, it like I said, it's significant in certain provinces, and for Alberta, of course, it's huge, less so in other provinces. But for the country as a whole, it's a large fraction of what we export, and so, you know, drop in oil prices is going to hurt us. But I can't tell you the exact fraction.
Okay. So once we get back to normality, once this crisis ends, how long could it take us to get back to, I mean, our economy, normal economy, the stable economy?
That's a question that I'm not sure I or anyone has a good answer to. I mean, where obviously a lot of this will depend on how long the crisis lasts and then how different life will look on the other side of this crisis. Mm. You know, for example, the longer we carry on in this sort of way of life, the greater the chance that a large number of jobs and large number of sectors are going to be affected and not recover to the extent they were before.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it could also permanently change our way of doing certain kinds of business. So, for example, it could permanently reduce the demand for travel, both tourism as well as business travel, both because consumers aren't willing to, you know, risk interacting or traveling long distances because they see the risk of that, as well as because air travel might just become much harder and more expensive. And if that's the case, and if there's a lot less travel, then that's, you know, that could affect certain sectors. It could continue to keep the price of oil depressed for a long time. So I would be very surprised, in fact, I'd be quite shocked if we just return to the situation that that was as of, say, January of this year. There will be changes, but the exact extent of those changes is going to depend on, you know, how quickly life changes.
Yeah, because many people say that these crises and this situation are going to lead us to change many patterns that we have acquired during all this time, right? So do you think that this pandemic will lead us to some, changes, significant changes?
Absolutely. I think it will in some sectors and not necessarily in other sectors. So some of this is sort of going beyond my expertise as an economist. They're just social changes that's hard for anyone to predict right now.
Mm-hmm.
But just casually, I would expect that, you know, right now we don't have any sporting events, any concerts, any large gatherings of people, and that might be the case for a long time, maybe even years, until, you know, vaccines are available and widely distributed. But eventually, once that happens, you know, hopefully we'll return to that way of living. But in other ways, like I said, long-distance travel might just be changed forever. It could just be the case that both personal and business travel will just be far, far lower than they used to be. And, you know, the notion of just jumping on a plane and visiting another country or visiting even your relatives in another country might become much harder to do, much more expensive, and therefore much less likely.
Yeah, there are some industries that are taking advantage of these these challenging times. I am thinking about companies like Zoom, for example, this video conference company. Do you think that those companies are going to still grow once this crisis ends?
I think so. I think it could well be that maybe they won't see as much use as they're seeing currently, but mm-hmm. they'll probably settle at a permanently higher level than we saw before the crisis. I think people are seeing that there's a great room for using, you know, video conferencing facilities and all kinds of things, even in my own line of work in universities. Mm-hmm. You know, even if we do reopen classes, hopefully this year, it's quite likely that large classes with, you know, hundreds of students won't be considered safe for a long time, and we'd probably continue to use video conferencing for those kinds of things. I would say the same would be true of business travel. That would probably fall in favor of more video conferencing. So Zoom, of course, I think will continue to be used at a pretty high level, if not the same level as today. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like you said, there's other businesses that are doing very well. You know, any kind of business that's involved in home delivery of goods, obviously Amazon, but any kind of business that can...
Video games.
Sorry, what?
Video games. I was thinking about video games.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Anything that can keep children occupied at home.
Exactly.
Who knows? You know, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and finally, how would you describe how government is acting right now?
You mean governments in Canada?
Yeah, government in Canada. Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I think we're seeing... it's mostly a pretty unified response so far. I think all the provincial governments have been working, you know, in accordance with the federal government. No one is defying or challenging or disagreeing with the unified response that the federal government is trying to put out, and that's good to see, as opposed to the U.S. where there's a lot of disagreement.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, that's going to be tested just in the next few weeks. I mean, we're already starting to see reports that Quebec might have a more ambitious plan to open than, say, Ontario or other provinces. So we might start to see a little bit more disagreement and lack of a unified response. But so far, I think Canadian governments, both provincial and federally, have done pretty well.
Okay, great. Well, so thank you so much, Mr. Chandra.